It's 20 hours GMT. The British Foreign Secretary says a humanitarian corridor is needed Goeiedag, u luistert naar Trent Radio 92.7 FM in Peterborough.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, girls and boys. This is Web Madman on the day after All Hallows Eve, and all the dead have returned to their graves, and the world is back to its regular normal self. And I hope you all had a ghoulishly great time last night during all the festivities, and maybe found yourself at a good party somewhere. And watching the dead come home. Ooh. So what are we going to talk about on this fine November 1st, which it's a lovely night out, or lovely day out there. It's no longer night, of course.
It's going to be chilly tonight.
Yeah, it feels like it already out there. Well, we're into November, so the snow should be flying soon. And
don't.
Well, it's already the point at which you can no longer go outside without a jacket on. Not at least comfortably. I live in a non-smoking house and I'm a smoker, so.
Right.
I'm very aware of the weather. So, how has your week been, Pilot K9?
Well, the other day I came across a stereo, one of those giant console monsters.
Oh, yeah.
$5.
Nice.
And I tried to get the Goodwill, the St. Vincent store, to loan me their dolly.
Right.
So I could get it home.
Right.
And I said, it was too late. I said, I'd figure something out. If I can get it home tonight, I'll pay you tomorrow. And
right.
The woman said, just if you get it out of here, bless
just
you.
Just take it.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I did. It's a monster, and I've pulled out the parts I need.
Yeah.
The preamp for the phono, and it's a 4-speed record player.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's very handy.
Because
I think that some of your more successful turntables tend to be come from consoles, right?
They tend to be pretty heavy duty.
Yeah.
They slide smoothly. And I can change the speed while it's running.
Right. Because I've noticed that you've had some that are mounted on boards, which I'm assuming came out of something like that.
Yeah.
Cool. So there's a new turntable on the way? Because you've been down
on the way.
Kind of one and a half these days.
Yeah, it's been terrible. But
right.
Let's see. I think I fixed the ground hum in one of them.
Okay.
And the two-armed. Variable speed, fully reversible and everything.
Yeah.
Well, that was terrible. It's like every week I would bring a new tool, and now I've got all the tools I need, and I'll fix it.
Right.
And it's finally, 2 weeks ago, I said, this is not working out.
Right.
You know, I phoned up Hartley to see if he'd bring me some super glue.
Right. And when all else fails.
Yeah, so I took it home, rebuilt it. So I've got two working tone arms, and I fixed the ground hum from that one.
Nice.
I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. No, that's good. Because, I mean, our booty jams have been at a bit of an ebb these days.
Yeah, well, I slept in, had a nap after dinner, and by the time I got there, people were leaving.
That's right, yeah. Not that there was a huge jam. I mean, as we've talked about before, it goes in ebbs and flows.
I think you've recorded about 6 minutes of jamming.
Yep, yep. So, I mean, there's evidence of our arrival anyway.
Yeah.
But as we've said before, it's the nature of these sorts of experimental sort of projects where they will have an ebb and a flow going on. That said, pretty much guaranteed, if anybody out there shows up, it usually motivates us to do stuff.
Yeah. Well, if you know two people show up and they say we kind of heard about you, we don't want to disappoint them.
That's right. That's right. So we end up diving in and doing the do. I was going to ask you about if you've been doing any slideshow or projection stuff at all.
No, it's been quite a while.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
Yeah.
Sometime soon. But
yeah.
I don't know if it's good for dancers. People will be showing up in their boots pretty soon.
That's right. Oh, yes. Well, I mean, that's, you know, take your shoes off. Come on in. Enjoy the spell.
Right.
Yeah, very cool. What should we talk about this week?
About Emergency.
Emergency,
are
that's
you planning
right.
something for that?
I am, actually. And that actually was a side projection on why I was asking you about your projectors.
Right. Yeah, Emergency number 17 is coming up, not until the end of March.
Right.
But the deadline for application is November 10th, which is...
10 days from now.
Yeah. I think that would be the Monday.
I think so. But yes, it's coming up. And because I, of course, have been working on my own proposal where I'd actually like to work with yourself as one projection artist, but also see if I can entice Lester into being involved. That's a dicier one because, as we know, he's perpetually busy.
Right.
My idea, as you know, is having this screen between the audience and the performers and using that to project upon and create a membrane. And one of the things that I've been bouncing around using as a kernel is, I don't know if you've ever seen R.D. Lang wrote a book called Knots.
I remember that.
Yeah, very, very simple. Like within a sentence or two sentences, he just epitomizes certain human relations.
Right.
So I'd like to actually take about 4 or 5 of those and
act them out.
Not act them out. Use them as starting points.
Right.
More so. Because again, I mean, they're very, very, you know, kind of the kernel of an idea.
Right. But they're also. There's a lot of repetition and switching words back and forth.
Yeah.
It looks like almost like concrete poetry on the page.
That's right.
It could be chanting or sound poetry.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason that I want to use something so kind of open-ended is so that I can work with the actors. I'm thinking about two actors, myself and someone else, because I'd like to do dialogue is usually a good place to start.
Right.
And have it open-ended enough that we can work out how best to do it, because you've got your own images as a projection artist. The actors will have their own ideas of how to enact the thing. So, you know, leave enough room for play and development where you get sort of a framework. I think one of the things that I'll do is come up with, and I've already been looking through for this, come up with a soundtrack. Mainly that will lock in the time frame.
Right.
That's in some ways part of my MO is to use kind of a bed track to lock in time frame. That way.
Do you hear that?
There's
someone at the door?
It might be someone out there. Ooh, spooky.
It is kind of spooky.
Well,
you go check that out.
You go and look. So he's.
If I'm not back in 10 minutes,
I'll put out an emergency signal. Oh, it's Parker. How you doing this week, Parker?
I'm doing pretty good. I've been very stressed out because of school, but, you know, it's the season, right?
It's the kind of year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than that, you're enjoying the cool down?
Yes. Actually, I'm fucking afraid of the snow, but I'm enjoying the weather.
Right,
the
right. Nice. That's good. That's good.
I'll get out of your face, guys.
Okay.
No, that's fine.
That's fine. We're just having a casual chat this week. nothing preset.
There's another mic if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Here, we'll turn you up there. We can get into some discussions. Now,
Actually, I probably should, I can unhook this thing.
Right.
The portable hard drive.
Right.
All over the place and in Parker's way.
Ooh, the third mic in this place is pretty funky.
Yeah, doesn't get used very much. No one ever really sits over here.
Right, right. Parker's the operator here?
Yeah, Saturday Night Operator.
Saturday Night Operator. And you've also been plugging into the Booty Jams the last little while.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other background in noise?
No. Both the noise and the Trent Radio experience kind of came at me out of the blue.
Oh,
in first year, I was like, you guys will give me a radio show? Really? Because I'd done a lot of theater in high school. I did a couple A-House shows and stuff like that. So I was interested in performance, but I never thought about radio. And then through Trent Radio, I met Brian and I met Dan Mirabella, who's also a big noise guy.
Yep.
And I was listening to a lot of, like, Neubauten and stuff. So I was, like,
already
into that kind of, ooh, this is fun to listen to. But it was only making the noise that came later.
Right, right. It was, you went from spectator to participant.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I had a really funny Neubauten moment. One of the last projects I did before I went to art school was a guy named Fred Graver had taken a play called Hamlet Machine.
Yeah.
And he had rewritten it for Peterborough and Canada.
Huh.
And I was asked to do the soundtrack for that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I got a call at work, and the theater director was saying, well, we heard you do cool tape loops and stuff. Can you? for each scene, I made up some sound.
Uh-huh.
I used a line from the play, a couple of lines from the play.
Right.
Sampled them crudely on a digital delay.
Right.
Sped them up, and then started recording and slowed it down so that by the end of the scene, you could hear what he was saying. But that was an adventure. But a year later, I was listening to this Neubauten album, and I recognized lines from the play.
Yeah.
Ooh, spooky.
They had done Hamlet Machine, the original.
Right, right. Oh, that's, you know, great minds think alike.
And it's a fucking creepy track. It's a really good track.
Yeah,
Blixa Bergeld is also the main singer of their group. He does a lot of noisy, screamy stuff.
Right.
But he also does theater and, like, ads for TV and stuff because he's got this really strong baritone voice.
So he
comes in and reads lines from Hamlet Spielmaschine or something like that.
Right.
So what TV ads does he do?
He did a series of TV ads for, like, the German equivalent of Home Hardware.
Where that's awesome.
Yeah, and he's sitting in, like, what kind of looks like a cloister or something, like this really, like, big gothic building, and he's wearing a cowboy hat and reading from cue cards, and it's like, bug zapper, 110 watts, kills bugs instantly, makes, you know, pleasing crackling noise, comes in indoor or outdoor models, and then, like, but really fast. You can find them on YouTube.
Wow.
We gotta check that out.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's so funny. Bizarre. Well, it's kind of like Peter Christofferson from Throbbing Gristle. The time that he was doing that stuff was making these covers for mainstream albums.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As we
talked about. There's good money in that, and they certainly needed it to. I mean, they weren't making a lot of money out of operating Throbbing Gristle.
That's, although, I mean, in this day and age, I'm imagining that because of the historical value, if they pulled out anything from the archives, they could probably sell it for a pretty penny.
Yeah, they occasionally come across an old recording.
Yeah, because I know that's one of the things that Coyle has definitely been doing, where they pull out obscure old stuff and are able to sell
it.
Yeah,
they've got tons of stuff that they've recorded that they haven't released.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, too, is with the Throbbing Gristle thing, I think a lot of that stuff got lost when Psychic TV got busted, right?
That could be. Yeah. I know they lost all their original William Burroughs tapes.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Scotland Yard got William Burroughs.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do.
Yeah. No, that was just the yay Thatcher era.
Throbbing Gristle is a pretty good moneymaker now.
Yes.
Well, it's kind of weird because you hear Throbbing Gristle mentioned a lot in discussions of like contemporary music or whatever. Like if you're listening to anything electronic, they'll get mentioned.
Yeah.
And the thing is that like probably in their day and age, like when they were actively producing music, they were way more underground than they are.
Oh yeah, no. And actually, there's reviews that you can find about them at the time, and they were hated.
I mean, they were just
universally panned as, you know, what the hell is this?
Well, that happened to a lot of, the Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
And magazines like Rolling Stone, once they realize how influential it's been over 10 years later, 20 years, they'll go back and rewrite their record review.
Yeah.
Yes, the big brother of media. Oh, that's funny.
But Throbbing Gristle ended up on Warner at one point. Warner issued a series of Best of Live. It was four or five volumes.
That's strange.
Yeah, that's really weird. Best of Live, this track will make you vomit. Right.
Among other things.
Yeah. Or cause you to develop a twitch. Like,
that will never go away.
Yeah.
Warning, this is an experiment.
Yeah. And you're the subject. Oh, that's funny. Although Throbbing Gristle are on hiatus now.
Oh, really?
Well, there was a Psychic TV. There was a plague of deaths.
Right.
It was Psychic TV. His wife died.
What was her name?
That's a good question. I'm so bad with names. No, I'd have to look it up.
Anyway, I thought Psychic TV was completely dissolved at that point, that they weren't going to carry on the project.
No, they were right ready to go on tour. They had a complete European tour, fully booked, ready to go. They were going to go for it, and then she died. And so the whole thing. Now, in retrospect, they were concerned because the promoter that was booking all of their shows for this tour was very sketchy. And it was, if they had have embarked on the tour, they very well possibly would have been running into a lot of canceled gigs because of bad booking. It was on the Psychic TV website. There was a whole blog following the whole process. Where they were all concerned about whether the promoter was doing his job or not, and whether this tour was going to happen, and then death. And then, of course, with Coyle, John Balance died a few years ago as well. So, as a result, I have the feeling that Throbbing Gristle will probably actually pick up and go, just because the side projects are all kind of kiboshed.
Well, Peter's got the new thing.
The Threshold House.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you heard any of that?
No, only clips. Yeah. Very, very brief clips. Boys Choir-y, which is not surprising.
He does like boys.
He is.
This is true.
He's living
now, in an interview. He was talking about using tapes of the Vienna Boys Choir, and he says, "Then I began messing about with them."
The tapes, not the boys.
Oh, only sleazy Peter, eh?
Classic. Very, very well said.
Yeah, yeah. That said, I mean, the last Psychic TV album, Hell is Invisible, Heaven is Here, is quite interesting and rocks out at points. I mean,
yeah,
they get quite rocky.
Yeah, that was kind of unexpected.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've always dabbled in every direction.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because some of their stuff has a very distinctly surferish kind of feel to it.
Right. They covered Good Vibrations.
Yep. Yeah.
One of the best songs of all time.
Yeah. When I first got into Psychic TV, they were very dance-oriented.
The Acid House phase.
The Acid House phase, yeah. Which was around the time that I also started getting into Coil. I first got into them through Love Secret Domain.
Right.
Which was very dance.
And then you listen to the lyrics and you're like, who the fuck could dance to this? Like,
yeah.
Whoa. But yeah, you're like, oh, catch a tune, drugs, death, murder, oh, whoa.
What are you doing there, dude? Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. It's good. Yeah, well, it was a long time that I owned that album, Love Secret Domain, before I realized that the initials of the title were LSD. Yeah.
So someone should compile an album of LSD acronym songs. There's, right. You know, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, Love Secret Domain.
Yep.
But there's got to be something else out there.
Oh, true enough. Now, it's interesting because with Coil, they actually did, I can't remember the name of the album, but every song was based on a psychedelic. They were saying that it was kind of ironic because they were kind of finished with doing psychedelics by the time they did the album. They'd already done numerous experiments.
Excursions, yeah.
And just decided that it was, you know, they'd explored it to the extent that they wanted to explore.
Including drugs that I first heard of.
Through them. But then sat down and basically tried to compose songs based on the feelings that they got from each of those psychedelics. So,
just on that note, there's a really cool collection of films on YouTube of Alex Gray talking about his experience of various psychedelics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah.
Being like, so this is my experience of being on ayahuasca.
Ah.
Oh, whoa. Because he's very articulate and very interesting.
Right? Yeah, well,
he takes a good spin on really intense psychedelics that you don't hear much. Anyway.
That's interesting. Well, because I heard Alex Gray's talks at Burning Man.
Oh, okay.
There's matrixmasters.com has just a huge archive of talks from Burning Man. It's called the Psychedelic Salon. Lots of talk with what's his name? Eric Davis, for one, but Daniel Pinchback. Who I'm also a big fan of. Mm-hmm. I actually find him very interesting in discussion. I had this conversation a long time ago about the difference between Noam Chomsky's written books and the stuff that's based on his lectures.
Yeah, fair enough. There is this divide between trying to set out a 500-page essay versus...
Just talking.
Talking, yeah. Getting like a thing on the coffee.
Yeah. And I'm certain that Pinchback, like, I've read Breaking Open the Head, and it was very readable at the same time because it's very anecdotal and you get lost in his stories, which are insanely easy to relate to. Now that is not what I was thinking of.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
What have we pulled up? I can't even see the monitor.
Alex Gray.
Oh, Alex Gray.
There's Alex Gray with his wife and daughter, and that's on matrixmasters.com.
Art, and love, family, and psychedelics.
Yeah.
There's Alex Gray holding his wife and daughter, I take it.
Yep. Which now, interesting, I listened to this lecture or talk or whatever, and their daughter has actually been, because they live in Southern California, and so she's been getting into acting. and is dipping into the Hollywood scene.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. And it was also very interesting because it really did come up about, you know, if you're raising a family, what are the parameters in terms of boundaries and, you know, those proper sort of things within family dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because Alex is a very big proponent for the responsible use of psychedelics, of course.
Yeah.
As opposed to just...
Can imagine him telling his daughter when she was younger, probably.
Yeah.
I don't want you taking marijuana. Daddy, you take all kinds of drugs. You're on drugs right now.
Which is why you're giving me a hard time.
You can't tell me not to smoke weed. You're high. Wait, what?
But as it is, I mean, from the way she was talking, she's in her late teens now, and it seems incredibly well adjusted. I do think that the key to all this stuff is context. Where I think that a lot of the people that are running around doing psychedelics have no context, and therefore, you know, kind of careen off into some very scary directions. And some of those guilt spirals are exactly what are used to perpetuate this war on drugs and all that sort of stuff.
Have you ever heard of a book called Mindfuckers? the Rise of Psychedelic Fascism?
Where's the bleep button around here?
We don't have one.
Sorry, who was that by? What was that?
I can't remember the author's name. I'm sure we can look it up.
Yeah.
But it was The Rise of Psychedelic Fascism.
Okay.
And it was on the shelf behind the counter in a bookstore for months and months.
Yeah.
And one day my building was being sprayed for roaches. And I had to put my cats somewhere, so I put them down in the basement of the record store.
Oh, okay.
And couldn't get them to come back out. They were freaked out.
Right.
So I sat down there and read this book.
Yeah.
I read about half of it. Still no cats. I came back the next day and wanted the book, and someone had bought it.
Oh.
Terrible.
Oh. So it was a tease. It gave you half.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've only got half.
Concentrating mostly on Manson and Mel Lyman, if you know anything about him.
No.
No. I have no idea who that is.
That's a...
He had this inner city psychedelic collective in the late 60s. He also was a musician. He played with the Jim Queskin jug band.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he controlled all of them.
Well, now there's a whole other side of this whole thing is the whole mind control thing, right? Which I'm, from the sounds of it, the I'm catching the gist now with, you know, Manson and this other guy where the whole idea of someone controlling someone else's mind, which is something that I have I'm very skeptical of. I think that, somebody can control someone else, but generally it takes that person's permission on some level. There's ways of securing that permission for sure. But I do think that, particularly in the case of Manson, there were some of the other folks that were involved that used that as way too convenient of an excuse. To cop out of their own responsibility within the situation. That said, I've seen Charlie talk there, and dude's a little off his rocker.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was thinking The Rise of Psychedelic Fascism would probably, you know, deal with more about, like, I'm guessing, like, Project MKUltra.
MKUltra, that's what I was thinking of, too,
I went through a period of reading as much as I could possibly about that, and there's a lot of declassified stuff now that's just...
There's too much of it.
And, you know...
And it's all horrifying.
It's all terrifying. You know, there's experiments of injecting, like, methamphetamines into one... or amphetamines into one arm.
Yeah.
And then, like, barbiturates into another arm. And they're like, you know, patient reacts uncontrollably. You'd expect, wouldn't you?
You would, exactly.
Like, I mean, what did you derive from this? They wanted to do mind control via psychedelics. That was one of the, like, you know, there's a 10 things they wanted to get, and one of them was mind control.
Mind control, yeah.
Psychedelics was their modus operandi.
Yeah.
They had some great preparations for spy work, though.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And they busted a big-time mafia guy by offering him a cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
He smoked a cigarette, and it was loaded with a ridiculous amount of synthetic THC. And then they asked him questions, and he just told them everything they wanted. I'm sure a lot of people have had that experience in the diplomatic world.
Right.
My God, why did I tell him all that?
It's because I was really frigging high. I can't believe that you get away with that in court. Well, you know, Your Honor, we got him really blasted off his, you know, like,
yeah.
How would that fly? That would not fly in a modern.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, and my guess is that they only use that information to then gather evidence, right?
Oh, okay.
That's the usual technique, I think. No, there was a friend of ours, David LeRivière, who I don't know if it's still there, mkultrafoods.com.
Yeah, liquid bacon.
Liquid bacon.
What? That sounds wonderful.
He became quite obsessed with the MKUltra, and also, more specifically, the doctor in Montreal, Dr. Cameron?
Yep.
That evil...
Yeah.
He was given the use of mental patients to experiment on.
Yeah, which, I mean, recently, and kind of fortunately, what's happened is a lot of that stuff has been come to the surface, and some of the people that have suffered because of it have been able to get some amount of compensation anyway. There was one woman in particular who remembers nothing before going in. They literally erased all of look at that. Oh,
there's Dave LeRivière's.
Right.
But there's also something from a half bakery called Liquid Bacon.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this is a real product.
It looks like it. Ooh,
no,
that's scary.
If it's on half bakery, it's just an idea.
Oh. Multiform mayo, liquid bacon, gravy to go.
Wow. But it is a suggestion as a food item.
Yeah, but they have, you know, like, hamster-powered turbines and stuff on there as well. So.
Half bakery.
Right.
It's quite good, though. I enjoy surfing it. But liquid bacon, tell me more. I want to know.
Right. Well, here's David LeRivière. Weird. He's got some sort of song on Archive, on archive.org. Oh, actually, it's through R Media. Right. I know he has a channel on R Media. I want to get you high. Liquid bacon is
it. Do you want to play this?
Yeah, sure. Let's play this.
Okay. You've got that coming up there.
Yeah. Our computers are scanning for viruses.
Making sure that it's okay. And there it comes. Well, shall we fade down our microphones and let this play for a while?
Yeah, certainly.
We'll come back.
Good.
Is a colorless, odorless goodness manufactured with the all-natural variants of an all-American family living on the proverbial family farm right here in Canada. Every bottle is delivered onto your door with the greatest of care, under the cover of night, with unconscious permission, and without your knowledge. Jocular, hyper-tweaked, future shop-styled sales team type. So you know that what I say must be the best deal for you. Don't take my word for it. Simply obey me and slather a bottle of its tacky charms into your head. It goes great with Hollywood movies and major record labels. I'm telling you. Liquid bacon is guaranteed to deliver right out of the bottle every time. And it's flexible. Liquid bacon can be applied liberally to every part of your body, depending on your mood and or level of commitment. It's so good, I've forgotten what life was like before my permanent erection. Yeah.
Lab-coated liquid bacon. Expert officials have honored the past accomplishments of Ronald McDonald and Walmart and Disney World. Spirit guides for the armies of willfully oblivious suburban passengers. In lockstep, we salute statutes, and status. You might ask yourself, am I one of the many who belong to the zoo? Am I all that I can be? If you have to ask, then you already know. And Liquid Bacon will direct you in good time. At the end of the day, remember that you have plausible deniability. Simply say, it never happened. As such. So, worry no longer. Special undisclosed additives and preservatives will prevent family or friends from evermore implicating your way of life. Reach for the smooth comfort of a body-warm bottle of liquid bacon and nose that head of yours with its sticky contents. It's a wholesome no-brainer.
Yeah, I was just going to mention the audiobooks at the Peterborough Library.
Oh, yeah.
There's quite a collection of them. Mm-hmm. I guess they're cheaper now that they're on CD.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
And they
sense.
Don't take 100 tapes to...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
Also, they have those weird little MP3 players that you can rent from the library. Have you seen those?
Yeah, I saw
really?
Those.
Yeah.
They've got the MP3 player and a book.
Uh-huh.
MP3 players are ridiculously cheap.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a weird product because it's one player, one book.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just got like a fast forward, play, and pause button.
Okay.
And you just take it out and you have your own headphones and listen to this book. But, you know, it's like $10 a day or something if it's late.
It's late, yeah.
Yeah.
And how long can you take it out? A week?
Yeah, I think it's a week.
Right.
I don't know.
And the batteries aren't included.
Yeah.
Meh.
And nor headphones. I just finished my first audiobook listening to it, and it was really cool.
Yeah. I've listened to a number of audiobooks, actually. But
I've been listening to a bunch lately, too.
Yeah.
Liberal Fascism.
Oh, right.
That was an interesting one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to Little Brother by Cory Doctorow.
Yep.
like him a lot.
Yeah.
There are a couple of Philip K. Dick novels now on audiobook at the library.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow. This could be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the one I'm listening to lately is called The Physics of the Impossible.
Uh-huh.
And it's made by a physicist.
Uh-huh.
And he's talking about, it's brand new, and he's talking about the cutting edges of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And how it's possible to actually build a Death Star laser.
I'm just going to be right back. But Death Star laser, very good material.
All right.
Not yet, actually, but
right.
It would take a lot of power. You'd have to have a star go hypernova,
okay,
to make an X-ray burster,
uh-huh,
and then you could focus these X-rays into a laser beam.
Whoa!
And it would be powerful enough to destroy a planet.
Well, I was just reading about how there are on Slashdot There was a link to a NASA thing about how there's this magnetic tunnel that forms between the Earth and the Sun every 8 minutes. And it's this crazy kind of tunnel-y thing that injects the magnetic sphere. There's a name for it.
Magnetosphere.
The magnetosphere. With particles.
Charged particles?
Charged particles, yeah. From the Sun. It does it on a regular basis.
Every 8 minutes. And how long does this last?
About 8 minutes. It's this kind of cyclical.
It's a cycle. Okay.
It's a cycle. Yeah. It's constantly going. And then somebody in the flash out was pointing out that it takes about 8 minutes for the speed of light between here and there, and it might be a resonant chamber of some sort.
A standing wave
going back and forth between the Sun and the Earth.
That is interesting.
Freaky, yeah.
Right. Well, I've seen diagrams of the Sun's magnetic field,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like a tangled mass of threads.
Yeah,
it's actually very complex.
Right.
If you see a magnetic field like the one for the Earth drawn in a textbook,
yeah,
it looks basically like the same shape as around a bar magnet.
Right.
But the Sun is full of loops and twists and...
Right. Well, because, yeah, I don't think the Sun has a north and south pole at all.
It does. It rotates.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because as you were saying that, I'm like, I've never seen a diagram like that for the Sun. I've only seen it for the Earth, but that's interesting.
Yeah, well, the Sun rotates, and it doesn't rotate evenly.
Right.
It's faster in the middle because it's not solid.
Right. Oh, that's weird. Just the vision of this thing where the middle is rotating faster than the ends. Oh, that's strange.
Yeah. Well, that'll make for some complicated magnetic fields, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then me and Hartley were talking about this kind of sphere that's around our solar system.
The Oort cloud?
Is that what it's called?
Where all the comets are?
No, this is around out, like past the furthest planet, which I guess Voyager's just approaching it now. That it protects us from some of the cosmic, some of the more intense cosmic waves, that it acts as a filter.
But it's a sphere of what? Of a magnetic field?
That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. I was just, when I was reading about it was just saying that it was like a barrier. That protects the inner solar system from some of the more intense cosmic rays and stuff. Which,
right.
When you get out into deep space, it's anything but empty.
Right, it's seething with virtual particles.
Yeah,
it's really weird the way particle antiparticle pair
can
just pop into existence.
Yeah.
Annihilate each other, and then what
go
happened?
Wherever. Well, and I mean, that's where the speculation of, you know, multidimensionality, how we're just seeing one dimension of many, and that, you know, when these things come into existence, they're just crossing over into our dimension.
Or passing through.
There's an amazing website, math-dimensions.org, and it's a series of visualizations that show you, it starts out with flatland, two-dimensional plane,
right.
And moves through all of dimensions into, you know, like one that's like, I think, 22. These shapes
That's too many dimensions.
Yeah. Well, have you ever seen the Hypercube?
Not the animated one.
Oh, the animated one is bizarre because it's this cube within a cube, but then as it rotates through itself, you see that there's no broken lines. Like, that's the freaky part about it, is that you can see that the lines don't break. They just kind of fold around each other.
Right.
I think that's part of the, part of this whole thing of particles that sort of come into existence, go out of existence. That really what's going on is that they're crossing through.
Right.
Just passing through. One of the things it reminded me of is a sphere as it looks in flatland.
Right. It looks like a circle.
A point. A point.
Growing into a circle, bigger and bigger, and then smaller and smaller.
Until it disappears again.
Because it's passed through the flat dimension.
That's right. The flat two-dimensional plane. So thinking of that in a dimension further than three dimensions, you know, that these things are coming through the third dimension.
Well, it's easy enough to visualize a hypersphere.
Yeah.
It would start as a point.
Yeah.
Grow into a bigger and bigger sphere.
Yeah.
And then shrink.
That's
and,
right.
And disappear.
Yeah. And that's these visualizations that they do in this series of animations kind of show all of that. I remember the first four-dimensional object that I saw that clicked in my brain was the a torus, a donut.
In four dimensions?
Yeah, well, you can fold it around itself in a way where the center becomes the sphere or the ring, and you do it in such a way it actually passes through this sort of fourth dimension. You can sort of see how, like the lines aren't actually breaking. They're just kind of folding through something. It's very strange.
I'll have to see this.
Yeah. And
well, sometime when Parker's going to be on right at 5.
Right.
Because he's a big math head.
Yeah. Well, he's the one that turned me on to them, actually.
Ah.
He was the source. So at any rate, we've covered mind control, multi-dimensions, geez.
In other words, the usual.
The usual. And I see it's, you know, ticking down to the hour. And I do hear it sounds like they're actually going to be on this week.
Hola, amigos.
Is it hola, amigos? Okay. Maybe we should transfer over to something that we can have playing in the background. Let that transition go. What you got up there?
Oh, that's just a station break.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. I do actually have some of your... I've been hearing this in the background.
That's one is a CD of Norwegian gothic stuff that I got today for $1.
Uh-huh.
It just looked odd and interesting.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I didn't even pay $1 for it. It was weird. I bought a suitcase at the secondhand store.
Oh, yeah.
It was $5.
Yeah.
And then I went and got some 3 CDs, National Geographic from 1960,
wow,
and an awl for poking holes in leather.
Oh, yeah.
Which just looked interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I started packing it into the suitcase, and the guy said, well, just $5 for the lot.
Nice. That's handy. Yeah. No, very cool. Yeah, well, right now there's...
CD 2 is a Risset... these are audio files that I made on the computer.
Oh, yeah.
On
right. And a Risset is a constantly rising tone?
Or falling, in this case.
Or falling, okay. Right. Those perpetual...
Turn that up a bit, and then I can explain just what a Risset tone is.
There we go. Now, is it, though, at 16th of speed?
No, that's the goth one.
That's the goth one. Okay, it's this one, then. Now, which... Oh, okay, that's like... It sounds like organy kind of music.
Yeah.
Okay, because the other one... I mean, you don't have headphones, because we're missing an adapter.
Oh. I'm just going to put one in my suitcase every time I come here.
Right. Because, yeah, I brought my headphones, but I don't have the adapter for it. But here, I'll hand you the headphones.
Okay, now this one's got something else going on.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's probably been run through a granulator.
Okay.
So can you flip back to track one?
It's this one?
Yes.
Okay. There's one. Reset.
Okay.
I can hear it through the headphones.
Yeah. How does it keep rising like that?
Kind of like a barber pole.
Yeah.
Which always just seems to keep going up and up and up. And it never runs out of itself.
Well, the way this works is that it's not one rising tone, but a number of them.
Yep.
They start very quietly at the lower limit of human hearing.
Mm-hmm.
They get louder as they get higher.
Mm-hmm.
So they're at the loudest at the range of, I think, 3,000 to 5,000 hertz.
Right. So that's the mid.
Yeah, where we hear things most clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets quieter again as it rises.
Right.
And starts again. And typically you'd have at least 8.
Right.
Like, to get it a convincing effect, I think you need at least 8.
Mm-hmm.
And this has actually been done with... analog synthesizers back in, 1968.
Wow. Totally makes sense. I mean, that's...
A modular synthesizer could Now you need 8 oscillators, like you know, a custom model.
Yeah.
Of course, at the time, a lot of them were custom models. Most of them.
Yeah.
Because they had modules which you would slide into a rack.
Yep.
And then you'd put in whatever you want.
It was very electronic. In that, you know,
highly technical.
Highly technical. You know, it's. Although, I mean, in more recent years, I remember seeing an interview with Aphex Twin where he was talking about in the late 80s when he was first starting.
Right.
He would often actually have his soldering iron and modify his equipment live on stage while he was doing his performances.
That's pretty far out.
Yeah. And he would do this thing where he would actually challenge the audience to bring him something to make a noise that he would then have to do something interesting with.
Man.
Yeah. So he was saying, you know, like there was like a pop can is something that's really easy. You get all kinds of clinky clunky things, right? But how about a carpet, right? Which is, yeah, exactly. But it's really, it get kind of challenging. Where it's like,
just rub the microphone on it, you get a great sound.
Yep, yep. So he, that was, you know, in his much, much more experimental days. That was when he was friends with Coil. He did a bunch of remixes for them. There was a, we were talking about Love's Secret Domain. There was an kind of an EP made that was called The Snow. And it had remixes of a bunch of the songs from Love's Secret Domain. And a good chunk of them were remixes by Aphex Twin. He did a bunch of them.
Cool.
So, yeah. It's all interconnected, you know.
That's what I've heard.
Yep. So, in the meantime, what I've queued up here is actually the latest from Tammy Lynn Foreman. She did her new instant video just in time for the Halloween. It's called Love Wind. So, we will probably get this going, queue it up, and let it ride for the switchover. All you girls and boys out there, I will see you again next week. Same time, same channel. Do the station ID, because I can never remember it when I try to do it. It's 92.7.
Okay, yeah. We've got those on MP3 files.
Right.
I thought that's what you meant.
No, I was just going to try and do it, you know, with you know.
Okay, you want to do the station break first?
Sure.
Okay, microphone off.
Off. Front radio, radio, front radio, radio, CFF, front radio, 92.7. Said 92.7. You do your orientation on 92.7 FM.